Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. I'm very excited to have Peter with me. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Jeff.
The reason I'm saying hey, Peter, is because Peter lives in Belgium and his last name is a bit much for my American mouth, but you wanna tell us your last name?
It's Codezer.
Codezer. And for those who want to Google him, he actually does spell his name P-I-E-T-E-R-C-O-U-D-Y-Z-E-R. You could go back 15 seconds and listen to that again and Google him, but he made a beautiful, beautiful short film called The Passerby that was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, which is a festival I'm the head programmer of. It is an animated short, and it won Outstanding Short Film, and it won Peter Outstanding Screenplay for an animated short film. So it is an incomparably wonderful film. And the podcast before this one was us talking about Peter and his life and career and how he became an animator and then quite a bit about The Passerby, which I didn't name The Passerby. I just said you made this amazing film, but the amazing film was called The Passerby. And I laid it on thick because this was my first chance to talk to Peter. We're zooming from California to Belgium. But this podcast, Peter is just going to answer the Discover Indie Film 4 questions, which are 3 favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. I'll share the spoiler that as I'm looking at Peter on the Zoom screen, and Peter, make sure I take our picture before we officially sign off, because I got to do a screen grab. But I'm looking at him, and behind him is his shelves with DVDs and CDs and physical media, and he even owns a Laserdisc player with physical Laserdisc that he can watch films on. So when Peter gives us his list, no pressure, but I'm rubbing my hands together in anticipation. You want to tell us your 3 of your favorites?
Which was very difficult because other people have said it before. I could just name 100, but I'm going to name 3 that I recently rewatched, so they're very fresh in my mind. Now, they're not all English language films, so some of them may be in the lesser known list. I don't know, but it's Andrei Tarkovsky's film *The Mirror*, which I think is an incredible masterpiece, and it's one of those films that when I first saw it, I absolutely fell in love with it, and I had no idea what was going on. Like, I just did not understand the film on an intellectual level, but I just felt it, and it just immediately became one of my favorite films of all time. Another one that I recently rewatched, and I think is an absolute masterpiece. It's a lesser known film, but I put it in my favorites list. It's Michael Haneke's first feature film called The Seventh Continent, which is one of those films that if you watch it once, you never forget it. It just burns itself into your brain. It's an incredible story about a story that happens for real, about a family that committed suicide, like the whole family committed suicide. And it's kind of an anti-capitalistic, anti-materialistic masterpiece of a film. I think his best one. Another one.
Sounds amazing.
My first English language film on this list. I rewatched it yesterday and said, might as well just put it on there. It's Once Upon a Time in America by Sergio Leone, which I think is also a masterpiece. And I'm talking specifically about the director's cut, not about the... There was another version which was edited by the studio, which is terrible. As a matter of fact, Siskel and Ebert named Once Upon a Time in America, the edited version, their worst film of the year, and the director's cut, they called it the best film of the year. And I agree with it. I think it's an absolute masterpiece. And it's overshadowed by his spaghetti western, but for me, this might be my favorite Sergio Leone.
I am admittedly way too ignorant about Tarkovsky, but The Mirror sounds wonderful. And The Seventh Continent, wow, definitely want to check it out.
That is an absolute must see. That is one of those films that I tell to everyone, watch it. you will be shaking at the end of that film. It's a masterpiece, and it's one of the most powerful anti-capitalist films I've ever seen without putting it into words. Like, it's a very visual film. Like, formally, it is extremely sophisticated and just, I showed it to my girlfriend the other day, and she was like, wow. Wow, I can't believe this. I'm so shaken to my core. It's great.
It's great. And yeah, Once Upon a Time in America, I remember, I do have a fond memory of, I did not see it in the theaters. And then when it came out on VHS, and it was two tapes, because I think it's about four hours, I think.
It's pretty long, yeah.
Yeah, but they had to put it out on two tapes, which tells you. But yeah.
The laser disc probably is also like five laser discs or something.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because laser, it's like every 20 minutes you got to flip, or 20, 25.
Yeah, something like that. Something that you have to flip.
Yeah. crazy.
Which is crazy. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I understand it's a tough question, but that's why it's not name the three best films ever made. It's just three films that are your favorites. So, you know, you're not saying these are your only favorites. Those are just three films that you absolutely love.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I could just as well put, the other Sergio Leone films in there. Michael Haneke, I think, also made amazing films. And Tarkovsky only made 7 films, but I think they are all brilliant. So, yeah. I just happened to watch these, have watched these very recently. So,
yeah. Excellent. Yeah. All right, well, the next one is a film you think is underrated.
I also put a couple down because...
Feel free.
I'll start with the big one, and that's Heaven's Gate by Michael Cimino, which he made after, I'm blanking on, The Deer Hunter, which he made after The Deer Hunter, which was critically panned, and I just love that film. I just love it. Something completely different is Star Trek, the motion picture, the first one, which is my favorite Star Trek. I like it better than Rathskan. I think it's brilliant. Love it. And then
you
I wrote down...
And by the way, is Heaven's Gate the one that, like, they pan as, like, one of the biggest financial failures of all time?
Exactly. Yeah, it was... it bankrupted United Artists, I think. Yeah. Completely flawed.
I admittedly haven't watched it. So now you've piqued my interest. And I agree with you about Star Trek, actually.
Oh, great. Finally.
I remember, I still have memories of the Voyager tie-in.
Yes.
And I saw that film as a child when it came out. I think it was like 78, yeah. I think, 78, 79. Oh, I don't
know. Something like that, yes.
I mean, I was...
79, probably, yeah.
Yeah, it came out, right, because Star Wars came out in 77, and then Paramount said, we can make money off our old sci-fi buddy, Star Trek, that we pulled the plug on way too early.
One of my favorite shows of all time.
I remember reading that the TV ratings never took demographics into account. And then they canceled Star Trek. And the following year, they came out with demographics and they realized, wait a minute, Star Trek was only watched by... let's just say, well, in a world of class, upper class, educated, wealthier, higher earners were watching Star Trek. So even if it wasn't the highest rated show, they actually could have sold really quality advertising on it. So it got canceled just before they realized it might have had an amazing fan base.
Yeah. But luckily they made The Next Generation, which I love even more.
Yeah, The Next Generation was an improvement really in every way.
It's an amazing, amazing show. This is one of the only series that I've watched, actually.
Yeah.
Love that.
All right, well, makes me want to watch Star Trek the Motion Picture again. But yeah, I remember, I just remember love just being completely carried away by that film. And the rest were action movies or...
Exactly.
You know.
It's the most Star Trek-y of Star Trek movies. It's about a mystery, you know? What is that thing? And it's fascinating and just... amazing production design, and Wrath of Khan is just a fun action movie, and the other ones as well.
Yeah, and then the other films are all quite fun, but yeah, they're still just, you know, I don't know, fell under the Star Wars trap of becoming a space soap opera with Spock dying and this and that, and then Genesis. But anyway. All right. Did you have any more underrateds, or you just want to stick?
I had one more, which I would put on my number one underrated, because I think this film has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 28, but since it came out, other directors have called it a masterpiece. Like Guillermo del Toro called it a masterpiece, and I agree with him, which is amazing for a film that has a 28% Rotten Tomatoes score. It's Ridley Scott's The Counselor, which I think is an amazing film. Script written by Cormac McCarthy. The film was kind of sold as a hard-boiled gangster drama, which it isn't. It's a very philosophical film. It's about death, about making one wrong step in your life and your whole life kind of crumbling to pieces. I think it's an amazing film that was probably sold to the wrong audience. Kind of, that's my impression. But I love
that,
it.
So that film was from 2013, when it was still, the fate of a film was almost solely determined by its advertising campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they just looked, okay, well, it's Ridley, and he's got this up and coming. I just looked it up. So it's got Fassbender, who is
his
amazing.
Best performance, by the way. I think if the film were a success, he would have gotten an Oscar nomination. At least.
So it's and Penelope Cruz, just an amazing cast. So
it's a fantastic film, I think. Yeah.
But if they looked at it and said, "Okay, we've got another, a Lincoln lawyer on our hands. Let's market it that way."
Yes.
Yeah, the marketing completely of a film used to make or break it. I guess it kind of still does.
I guess it still does, but yeah, probably. Like, I didn't watch the trailer for this film. If I had, I would probably not watch it, because I think it's completely, no, the trailer is not the movie. Definitely not.
Well,
not in this case.
Well, by the way, the good news, everybody, is it's on HBO Max, so I can watch that tonight. I might suggest that be our nighttime viewing, because I can hop right on that. And honestly, with Michael Fassbender in it, it's not a hard sell.
make sure. I don't know if it does, that is the director's cut.
Oh, there's a different cut.
Okay. Because there are different cuts. And when I say it's in a masterpiece, I have never seen the theatrical cut. I only have seen the director's cut. So maybe there's a big difference. I can't tell.
Well, I would assume HBO tends to be good about that auteur stuff. But I'll check.
Yeah.
I'll check. All right. Well, this could be fun. The next one is your overrated film.
Okay. I also have three, but I'll keep it short. I'm starting with The Godfather Part 2. Not because it's a bad film. It's a good film. But why is everybody telling me that it's better than the first one? It is not. It is structurally messy. The flashbacks are all over the place. It's a good movie. It's not The Godfather Part 1. It doesn't have any of the kind of fully fleshed out memorable scenes that the first one has, like the opening scene with Brando. It's a good movie, but don't tell me it's better than the first one. It isn't.
I mean, you are actually, it's like you're reading a script that I wrote. I've often used Godfather Part 2 as, it's a very good film.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, it's all over the place. And it's not as great as the first. And so many people say it's better than the first. And that drives me nuts.
I have the impression that most people think it's better. I mean, I feel like there's a consensus that it's better.
Yeah, I think maybe because De Niro appears. I don't know. I don't know why people ask. And honestly, when they get to Cuba and all of a sudden Michael Corleone is like, oh, he's the guy who knows.
Yeah.
He can look out the window of a limousine and say, well, I think these Cuban rebels under Castro, they might win. You guys might be wrong. I'm really, the gangster has this global view. I don't know. I just find the, honestly, I don't like it. But anyway.
Yeah. I think it's okay, but it's not something that I would rewatch. I would rewatch the first one, but the second one, I don't know.
The first one's poetry. The first one is perfect.
Exactly. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Another one that I chose is, for different reasons, The Godfather Part 3, which there is a consensus. Yes, it's the worst of the three. But I still hear a lot of people telling me, yes, it's only bad if you compare it to the other ones. If you look at it as a solo film, it's actually quite good. And contrary to The Godfather Part 2, which is a good film, I don't think The Godfather Part 3 is a good film. I think it's actually pretty bad. And then that includes the new cut. He made a new cut, Coppola, which is called Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone. Doesn't fix anything. I just think it's a parody almost of a Godfather. Doesn't work for me at all.
I'm nodding my head in agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was made, you know, I often say one of the reasons I'm passionate about the kind of indie films we get at the festival level is because they're made for the right reasons. They're made by people who just really need to tell this story. And the story in Godfather Part 3, no one needed to tell it. They just knew this was intellectual property that could make a profit. And Coppola, you know,
he jumped on it. Yeah.
He has a mortgage on that winery.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure he sells enough wine now to cover it. But yeah, I mean, that film was made for commercial reasons, not artistic reasons.
Yes. And it shows. It shows. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
A third one, and this is, I think, going to hurt a lot of people because it's a very beloved film. It's one of those films that I think the film is okay, but a lot of people say it's a masterpiece, one of my favorite movies, it's amazing, this and that, and I just don't see it. I've seen it three times. The first time, I didn't like it. The second time, I wanted to rewatch it just to check if maybe I wasn't in the right mood, and I still didn't like it. Third time, same thing. And that's Pan's Labyrinth. I just don't get it. I just think it's an okay mainstream Hollywood movie. It's Guillermo del Toro's kind of first, I guess, his breakthrough film in the States, at least. It's okay, but it's nothing special. I don't understand why you would call that a masterpiece. But if you do, more power to you.
More power to everyone who loves it. I love differences of opinion.
Yeah,
me too. I don't mean to lower your opinion of me, but it has been on my list of films I can't believe I've missed.
Yeah.
Since it came out, since it was in theaters. And I actually think my partner, she loves it. And I've said to her a dozen times, I'm like, can't we just watch Pan's Labyrinth tonight? I've really got to plug that hole.
Yeah.
You know, because, and we always watch something else. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, just watch it.
So you're the first person to tell me it's not all that great. So that'll be interesting. We'll see.
Oh, no, but I feel like completely alone in this opinion. So you should watch it. Like, it's just, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just, I don't see what's extraordinary about it. It's a mainstream, well-made Hollywood movie. It's not a Hollywood movie, actually. It's a Mexican movie, actually. Right? Yes, it is. But I don't connect with it that much.
Well, you know, I'll join you in pissing off the public briefly since you threw Pan's Labyrinth on there and it's gotta make some people mad. But I would almost put Del Toro in the overrated category because for me, Alfonso Cuarón is the titan for me. I just think his films are almost they just blow me away. And I hear more people sing Guillermo del Toro's praises. Of course, I don't mean to say that there can only, I feel a little bad now because they came out of Mexico as the same generation and they get compared and it's not a fair comparison. I should be comparing them to all other directors, but
of course, and they're completely different directors, but I agree with you. Yeah. I think Guillermo del Toro he makes good films, but they're not extraordinary. I think his Oscar-winning film, I'm blanking on the title now.
That Shape of Water?
Shape of Water. Like, that was an okay film, but I don't think it's that special.
No, it was almost I was delighted by the fact that I was watching it. I'm like, I cannot believe he got a Hollywood studio to put up this the money for the film. And and it is a fairy tale for grownups, which I appreciated.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, it's not like I was surprised or, you know.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what it is. I think it's, I think he has kind of that Tim Burton aesthetic or a kind of a different take on that kind of thing. I think that's what a lot of people are attracted to, probably. I don't know.
For sure.
Like I said, all the more power to him. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, no, and I mean, if someone said to me, do you want to live in a world with or without Guillermo del Toro making things? And I would say, I want Guillermo del Toro making things. Because, yeah, they're absolutely, don't mean to, no hate towards him.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. No, it's just, it's a shame that I don't connect with it. It's,
yeah, in that particular film, which does get a lot of praise, a lot.
It gets a lot of praise, and I think it's an okay movie.
For sure. All right. Well, we just have one more question left, which is the lesser known to seek out.
I wrote down three as well. One is a small indie film called The Vast of Night.
Of Night with a V?
Yes, with a V, which is an Amazon production, I think. And I forgot to write down the director's name. It's a first film, and it's like a throwback to 80s midnight movies, and it is the best throwback to the 80s midnight movies. It is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Also formally amazing. There's a lot of great, amazing camera work in there. It takes place during one night, and it's kind of an... No, I'm not going to spoil it. You just have to watch it. It's amazing.
Excellent. I'll add, I looked it up while you were talking, and it's included with Prime Video, so I can watch it.
You have
watch
to
it right
watch
away.
It. It's amazing. You won't regret it. I hope. another one that I wrote down is Holy Motors by a French director called Léos Xarax, and it's an insanely art housey but very entertaining film that you have to see to believe. It's about a guy, an actor who, during one night, drives around in a limousine, goes from place to place, and at each different place, he's doing kind of a performance. There's like a big scene where he's like playing someone who's dying. When he dies, he stands up, goes into the limousine again, gets taken to another place, and it's just an insane film, which is very difficult to describe, so it's practically impossible. But great movie by a great director also.
Excellent.
And the third one was actually a film that was a blind buy on Blu-ray. And I bought this film because I love the actor, the main actor in it, which is Richard Dreyfuss. I love Richard Dreyfuss, especially his films in the 70s and 80s. And it's a film called Let It Ride by a director called Joe Pitka, whose most famous film was Space Jam, the original Space Jam movie, which I haven't seen. But that film, Let It Ride, is amazing. It's a fun, character-driven, great movie about gambling. And I'd never heard of it before I bought the Blu-ray, and now it's one of my favorite comedies.
Excellent. Yeah, Dreyfuss is really, he's really great when you think about the things he's done.
He is, yeah. I love him. I think he should do more films now.
Yeah. Hopefully there will be a renaissance where people, I don't know if he's difficult or not, but he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably, I don't know.
Who knows?
He seems like a very nice guy, yeah.
By the way, Let It Ride has another favorite actor of mine in it, Terry Garr, who I think...
Yes.
I think Terry Garr
was
vastly underrated. Her whole career, she should have been...
Exactly. She's been
an A-list
a lot
star.
Of, yeah, she's been in a lot of classics. a lot of Close Encounters, which I love, but and other movies. She's amazing. Yeah.
Other movies and funny and smart and just yes. Always good. And always. Yet, you know, for some reason, never.
It's weird. Yeah.
I don't understand. I always attributed that maybe to the sexism of Hollywood or something that.
Maybe. I don't know. Is it? I mean, I think cinephiles know her, but.
Like, cinephiles know her. I just mean that like the Hollywood studios, they were like, well, she's smart and funny, but, you know, we'd rather make, you know what I mean? I think they don't like smart, funny women. They want their women to be docile. I don't know. I'm projecting, yeah. I suppose, but.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like Terry Garr didn't play the studio game that a lot of studio heads like and probably didn't demean herself to their desire.
Yeah. That could be.
That's my assumption. Be. But thank goodness there were people like you just mentioned, Joe Picca and Mel Brooks, who looked at Terry Garr and said, "You will be wonderful in my film."
Yes. For sure. Exactly. And she's great in Let It Ride as well. She's amazing.
Great. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up. For those who want to learn more about Peter and his work, his film, The Passerby, is a wonderful film that won 2 awards at Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year. So you can go to his website, which I could read off the letters to you of his name, but instead just go to the show notes and tap on it. It'll be a link right there. And if and when Peter sends me an email and says, okay, The Passerby can be watched here, I will update the show notes and include that because I do think everyone should see his film and maybe all the others. I'll be asking him for private links right after we stop recording. But and you just got to hear his favorite film. So, you know, he's a person of discerning taste. So, of course, his own work is probably equally good. So I will get us out of here by rattling off the websites and social media handles. You are listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast. I forgot to say this for the last one, where after Peter's interview, but please like and subscribe. Be nice. Write good reviews of things. Give 5 stars. The Discover Indie Film podcast gave birth to the Discover Indie Film TV series on Prime Video. So just go to the Amazon Prime Video app on a nice big smart TV. Don't watch movies on your phone, but, you know, I can't stop the young generation from not caring about the quality of the screen they're looking at. But go to the Prime Video app and type in Discover Indie Film and enjoy 7 seasons. Season 8 is coming soon. By the way, season 8 is 100% dance films because I got to guest curate a dance film festival in England. And I asked the head programmer if she wanted to be a guest curator for an all dance season of Discover Indie Film. And she said, yes. So kind of excited. There's going to be a whole season of dance films. I got to tell you, as someone who has zero dancing ability, when I see human beings moving with grace on screen, I'm just moved. So that is my pitch. Oh, so to go to discoverindiefilm.com or at DIFWINS on social media, I mentioned that Peter's film, The Passerby, won couple awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November. You can learn more at shermanoaksff.com and it's at shermanoaksff on social media. And finally, there's a sister festival, Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn more if you go to filminvasionla.com and it's at filminvasionla on social media. We hold that one every June. 2 festivals a year just to keep ourselves busy. They're about half a year apart. So, you know, I get about a month or two in between to relax, and then it's like ramping up again. But thank you, Peter, so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, and thank you, everyone, for listening.